Meaningful Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, the Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are actually discussing three steps, steps 5, 6, and 7, which state, step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And step 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And please welcome our panel this evening. We have Greg and Ryan. All right, I will read the first section on page 72, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, the first paragraph begins, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We've admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us have thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their housekeeping. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone all their life story. All right, who wants to go first?
I'll go first. My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me tonight. I always enjoy doing this. I love this meeting. But I guess I just would like to share a quick background. I grew up in Williamsburg, started drinking when I was 15. The very first time I drank, there was nothing normal about it. Me and my buddies, you know, drank a whole bottle of liquor, and it just started everything off really quick. By the time I was, you know, 18, 19, I was already getting arrested. I was doing anything under the sun that would change the way I felt. I'll get to the fifth step soon, but until I did my fifth step, I had no idea why exactly I was doing what I was doing, except I just knew I liked it a lot. I built my whole life around drinking and drugging. I honestly, you know, made that the center of everything. I dedicated myself to that lifestyle, and I liked it for a long time. I had a lot of fun for a certain amount of time, but I took everything to the next level and beyond. And by the time I was 24, you know, I had been arrested multiple times. I'd been in multiple rehabs. You know, I'd destroyed relationships. You know, I'd experienced a whole lot of pain as well, enough to the point where I knew that something was terribly wrong. I wanted to stop certain things. I could not stop at all. If I stopped one thing, I'd do more of the other. You know, I drank from when the sun came up to when the sun came down. If I stayed up all night, you name it. But by the end, I was desperate, lonely, exhausted, just totally, utterly exhausted. And it was not fun anymore. I attempted AA one time first when I first went to treatment. And it lasted for about 6 months. I was engaged with fellowship. I was going to meetings all the time, but I didn't dive into the steps. I did it the best I could. I think I just didn't know the seriousness of my disease / didn't realize how potent and how powerful the steps are once you do them. But after going back out for 3 more years, I proved to myself a lot more things, and decided that this time around I was gonna dive right into the steps. So I got a sponsor. I asked my sponsor. I was like, "Listen, I want to do the steps." He was like, "Okay, that's fine." I was really eager, and I think that's what it took for me. Because I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. So I did one, two, and three. And when I did my third step, I was basically committing to doing the rest of AA's 12 steps. I did my fourth step. It took me a month or so. And then I get to step five. So before, you know, I was kind of timid of, like, what I wanted to tell people, the secrets I had, you know. I was so used to keeping secrets and hiding stuff that was just my default. But by the time I got to this step, I was just tired of all that, and I knew that I would just have to defy my own instincts and just tell somebody. Basically, I just had to read my fourth step. I wrote it all down in my fourth step. Me and my sponsor got together one morning. We ate breakfast. And I just sat down with him and started reading my fourth step. It wasn't that complicated. I mean, it wasn't even as hard as I thought it would be. It took a little bit of time. It took all day long. I was pretty exhausted afterwards. But I felt really, really good after it was done. I had a huge amount of weight lifted off my shoulders. A lot of the thoughts and the racing thinking that I always had was gone, because I had talked about everything that had been going through my mind for such a long period of time that I just gotten it all out. And plus, I knew my sponsor pretty well. We had become pretty close, so I was already sharing some deep stuff with him. So It wasn't that big of a deal when I got to that. But the funny thing is, most of the stuff I had told him we were talking about, you know, we laughed about it, or come to find out he had done a lot of the same things I had done, or he knew somebody that had done something like that, and I just didn't. It made me realize how big of a deal I was making it in my own head. It wasn't even, you know, we're all very, very similar, not just as alcoholics, but as human beings. And, you know, I thought I was so different. I thought I was such a bad person and this and that. But, you know, come to find out, we all do a lot of the same stuff. And that's kind of what it showed me. But, yeah, that's fifth step. After I finished it, so much stuff started changing. It was unbelievable. But that's all I got for so far. Thank you.
Okay, I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic.
Greg.
Gosh, you took a lot of my thunder away, man. Because I, you know, I'm slimmer. I'm similar to Ryan. You know, like I was done. I had 20 or 30 years of drinking and everything else, and it was progressing to a point where it wasn't working anymore, and I was losing things in my life. You know, I was losing, like, the biggest thing was I was losing fiance at the time, and so I was desperate to do anything to, you know, get that back. I didn't want to lose that, so I was. Her and I were slowly going into counseling, and you know. And the counselor was like, well, we need to look at your drinking. And I was like, no, we don't need to look at that because, you know, it's that's not the problem. The problem is something else other than drinking. But that was the big problem. And so more got revealed with that and unraveled. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, got to a climax to a point where one night in Richmond, you know, I was slumped over on the toilet. Everything accumulated to this point where I was slumped over on the toilet. She's like, you know what you did last night? I was like, no. She's like, well, you were on the toilet again, slumped over, passed out. You know, so I had this humiliating feeling of, all right, I got to give up. You know, I just can't do this anymore. So a couple of days, and that night, I prayed for the first time in my life. I prayed to God that I needed help, you know. It was a real prayer. It wasn't that foxhole prayer that we do to get us out of a situation. It was one of those real prayers. So that was like my first, you know, spiritual thing that happened to me. And I look back on that, all these little things that led up to that point in my life. You know, she was in my life for a certain reason to get me to where I'm at today. I hate to say it like that, but, you know, God, my higher power was setting these things up to get me to where I'm at, you know, to where I needed to be at. And I was ready to accept it. I think that's what the ultimate thing was. So, yeah, a couple days later, I just walked into a meeting, and then my life, everything just started lining up. I was a white ship wonder, you know. I was just done with, you know, the lifestyle, you know. Like, I was just tired of it. It wasn't fun anymore, like Ryan said. So I went on this, started this journey, you know. People, God put people in my life, one guy in particular, and then my sponsor, Larry, you know. We both have the same sponsor. And we just started working the steps. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I didn't know. I knew I had a willingness to do something different. In the first meeting I sat in, some kind of awakening happened. You know, I felt at home. You know, that for the first time in my life, I felt at home at the first meeting I went to. And I knew, and I was crying, and I was like, you know, submitting to something. I don't know what it was, but I just felt at home. And so, excuse me. So I was willing, I had surrender, and I was willing to do this stuff. So, you know, we sat down and we went through this, we cracked open the book, page zero, and we drew in it, you know, the circle and the triangle, and he meticulously explained, you know, this process, and it was amazing, you know, the journey, sitting on the porch, you know, on a river, just kind of like, you know, friendship that we have, you know. So basically, you know, step one, step two, and then step three is where, you know, turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. I really didn't know what that was all about, but he explained very, you know, he's like, Greg, you know, these things lined up for you. Look at this, your higher power or God that did these things and lined things up for you. You know, so I had this, aha moment where there is something else beyond me working in my life, getting me to this point where I'm sitting down in a chair with a guy that I met 4 months ago, going through these AA steps. You know, so everything's kind of clicked for me. And I was willing to do the fourth step. You know, I went through the fourth step. It took about a month, 2 months, or month and a half, you know, and there's some tears. And, you know, there was a couple of big things in there that I felt really ashamed about. There were lies, you know, that I told people about me. And, you know, I just, it was all fear-based. You know, I didn't want people to see the real me and these things that I did. And, you know, like Ryan says, you know, we're all similar in this boat. You know, we're so similar with the fears and everything like that. What people think about us, you know, that kind of fear. So in my mind, I'm going through all these things and I'm looking at them. I'm like, they're just so kind of ridiculous. You know, these things that I'm scared of, they're not really that big of a deal. And my sponsor and I were talking about them. And, you know, like, as I'm working through the fourth step. So when we got to the fifth step, by that time, we were laughing about them, you know? And, like, I was just a big loser, you know? It was kind of like, it was just pretty funny, you know? The relief happened for me fourth transitioning into the fifth step. You know, I was willing to do that. And so I was getting relief for me just, you know, automatically kind of just getting it. So my first fifth step was, it was like Ryan described, you know, it was just this eye-opening, just weight off the shoulder kind of thing. You know, it was really powerful at the time. And, you know, it's a tool. You know, we develop these, the fourth and fifth is a tool that we use throughout this journey of sobriety. You know, I used the fourth and the fifth step again, you know, in emotional sobriety that I've been dealing with or I dealt with in the past year. So I used it again, and that's where it really, really helped out, where I could go back to this tool that I learned and really apply it to some really painful things that I was going through, like emotional sobriety. You know, the first fifth step was okay as a piece of cake compared to like this incredible emotional sobriety breakdown that I was having the past year. And I went right to this tool that I learned, this fourth and fifth step. And my sponsor suggested that I do a fourth step. So I wrote like that second fourth step on this stuff. It was like 16 pages, you know. My first fourth step was, you know, it was like a book, I guess. But, you know, like this one particular thing that I was going through, it was 16 pages, you know. And it's just amazing, you know. It freed me again. It freed me again from the bondage of things that bring me down, you know. Like, we don't have the drugs or alcohol anymore, so what do? We use other things, and, like, our feelings get really torn apart, you know, emotionally in here. So, yeah, the two fifth steps I've really done have really, it's an amazing process to go through it with somebody that you really, you trust and knows you very well, you know, like a good sponsor. And so, and that's all I have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We are going to move over to page 73. It says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking.
Yeah. I was definitely leading a double life, and I can kind of still do it today. But like I said earlier, everything that I had grown into up until that point in my life was all based around drugs and alcohol. My character and who I was all built off of that. So when I didn't have that anymore, I didn't know, it was scary because I didn't exactly know what I was. All my friends, all of the you know, things I did. It was all based off of that. And you know, I definitely can relate to this part because, like, I'm a master manipulator. You know, I want my parents to think a certain thing. I want my friends to think a certain thing. I want everyone to think a certain thing. Because deep down inside of me, I'm hiding something from everyone. I don't really do that anymore. It's an exhausting way to live. But when you have to protect your addiction, that's the only choice I really had. So I got really good at that. And I would fool myself even. I got so good at fooling other people that I was fooling myself. I talked myself into, you know, everything's okay. It's not that big of a deal. You know, and I was living a delusional life. I wasn't being true to myself or to other people. But I guess this is like step six, isn't it? Well, yeah. A lot of the things I had on my fifth step, I didn't think I was going to tell anyone ever. I don't know why. I think I don't know. I thought people wouldn't like me or something if they found out what I was what I had in there. But after I started talking about it, and it got easier and easier. It just started coming out of my mouth. My biggest fear on my fifth step was fear of not being good enough. So everything I kind of did revolved around that one deepest fear, like overcompensating, showing off, doing things like way too much or way too little, just trying to make people think I was something that I wasn't. And when I drank, it definitely made me feel like I was good enough. So I dug deep, and that's what I found out about myself, was that beneath all of the character defects, all of the lying, cheating, stealing, manipulating, beneath all of that was the fact that I didn't feel like I was either good enough or could measure up to other people. And so my actions manifested out of that fear. And I would have never realized that unless I had done my fourth and my fifth step. I just would have blindly kept acting. I mean, I can still do it, but at least I know why I'm doing it, you know. I can always, you know, I can see it now. And it helps a lot, at least knowing what drives my character defects. But yeah, so living a double life, for me, it all manifested out of that one fear, was not being good enough and trying to hide that from other people. When really, the reality of it is, I'm equal and everyone in here is all equal. We're all the same. No one's better than anyone else. And for some reason in my mind, I just thought that, like, I wasn't. So that's how I relate to that paragraph. Thank you.
You sure I'm not better than you, man?
You're better than me.
I like what he said, you know. You know, we have this gift of seeing these character defects now. Before, it was like self-will, you know, run riot, me, living the double life, lying, where's the party at every weekend, can I extend the weekend to 5 days, let's binge the whole weekend, you know, like, that was my drive. That's what I lived for, you know. So the gift is, you know, that we can realize how we're behaving, you know, and then we can say, okay, you know, kind of get into this 6 and 7. We can say, okay, God, I realize what I'm doing. And when the pain gets too great, you know, I say, please give me some relief. Help me remove this defect, you know. But yeah, just like that paragraph describes that, you know, why was it written in the book? You know, and it's to this whole audience. We all live this double life, these double standards. I mean, it's a characteristic of us addicts, alcoholics, you know, like we do that. Why do we do it? I don't know. Genetic, I don't know. But that was me. I did that, you know. And like Ryan said, I have the gift to like catch those things and to be like, don't do that, Greg. You know, like, what are you doing? Like driving over here, you know how it is. That traffic was insane, and some character defects came out. And I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, what am I doing? You know, I'm going to an AA meeting, and I'm about to like blow the car up, you know, in front of me, and like just splatter blood everywhere. But you know, I can catch myself like flaring up, an alcoholic flare up. So it's a gift, you know, like. I'm a grateful alcoholic, you know, it's because like it's a gift to be sitting here talking in front of all you people 4 years into this thing, you know, like I wouldn't dream that I'd be doing anything like this, you know. Ryan and I are like best buds, like we would never have, he had really long hair probably back in the day, like we would probably have hung out or something, I don't know, but it's just, you know, it's a gift. I mean, we have all these friends, true friendships in here, you know, we share this common bond, and it all happens through the steps. You know, you work steps 1 through 12 with a sponsor as best you can, and miracles happen in your life, you know, and it happened in mine. And the whole purpose of the book is to bring us to a higher power, and that is exactly what happened to me. You know, I rely on this thing every freaking day of my life. And God can be a group of drunks, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, this thing that we can't see. It can be the rooms. But the fifth step was that freeing process for me, and like the paragraphs describe, you know, that's us, that's me to a T, and I think that's all I have.
All right, thank you. We are now going to move over to page 75. It says, when we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. That feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come on strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
Yeah, I guess back in the day, they didn't really specify that you did it with your sponsor. I guess you could have done it with a therapist or a random person or a priest or something. But I guess the more we started using, starting to do sponsorship, people just, you know, knew or insinuated that they were going to do it with their sponsor. But technically, I guess you don't have to do it with your sponsor. It just says, you know, someone that you can trust and confide in. just don't do it with your parents or a family member. Not a good idea. But I like this part because it's the fifth step promises. And I might have touched on them a little bit before, but unless you've actually done this thing, this fifth step thing, it's hard to describe what it's like. I was extremely exhausted the day I did it, but the next day and the day after that, It says, it even explains it here. I did get this feeling of like that the drink problem had disappeared strongly. I felt that. Like I said before, I used to have racing thinking, like thought about all this crap all the time. And for some reason, after I had finished my fifth step, it was just like silent. There was nothing left to think about. So it was pretty cool. And having that much space now in my mind and my spirit, you know, it opened up a lot more room for new stuff to come in, new ideas. I had more energy. I just like became more productive. I had more fun. I laughed more, you know, genuinely. It was great. You know, I've never really felt something like that without taking a drink. You know, that's what I was searching for the whole time. Was that like peace? You know, and it just kept getting better and better, especially after doing this fifth step. But our fears fall from us. That was really big for me. I didn't realize how much fear, not just the fear I was explaining about earlier, but I had all kinds of fears. And it was keeping me from doing a lot of the things that I really wanted to do deep down, as far as like social stuff, business stuff, relationship, family stuff, like all these things that deep down I really felt like I was not experiencing to the fullest of like that life could offer. After I did my fear inventory and did my fifth step on that, and the fears diminished, I asked God to remove my fears. His fears started diminishing. I started facing them head on. And soon enough, I was doing a lot of the things I thought I'd never, ever be able to do. And I didn't realize how much fear was actually blocking that until after all this. But it's a really cool thing. I can't, like, I've never been able to talk anyone into doing anything in this program. I can't convince anybody to do anything. But I honestly did this to the best of my ability, and it was probably the most effective thing I've done. I went to therapy. I mean, I'm not bashing therapists or doctors or anything, but all that stuff helps. But as far as my fears and like resentments and like really digging down to the root of everything, this was like the most right to the point, quickest, most potent thing that I'd ever done. Getting better. And after I did it, I can look back now and I had this extreme growth spurt, just in every aspect of my life. It was so good that I want to do it again. You know, that's the addict in me. I was like, I want to do it again and again and again, but like, I could only do that one big fifth step that one time. I have done smaller ones, as I do step 10. But I got so much relief, it felt so good that I'm like, I want to do that again. You know what I'm saying? But that's all I really got on that. Thanks.
Yeah, I like what you said, man. I like what you said. I reference this so much. Like the promises. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. You know, looking back, I felt that. I felt that because of this fifth step process. What happened is all these things that I had, these lies, these fears, it was all fear driven, you know, that the core of all of mine was fear. All these fears that I was scared of, they just vanished. Now, why was I scared of that stupid crap? You know, I'm telling this big lie because I wanted people to, you know, like me better. You know, once that lifted, it was just it's just a freeing experience, you know. And like Ryan said, we clear away the wreckage of our past, and that's that process. We clear away that wreckage in the fourth and fifth step. And what do we do that for? Is to bring in this higher power to fill that void, right? To make a clear path to whatever you call your higher power. That's essentially what's happening there in that step. And that's what happened for me. The more has been revealed, the longer I stay in this thing, and the more I have low spots in this program. I think, you know, you hear it all the time. You go through growth with pain, you know. And my low spots are where I don't ever want to be there, but then you come out of it, and yes, I've had this incredible amount of growth. And what has happened is I rely on my higher power for you know, to get me through that stuff. And it's because of, as a result of that first fourth and fifth step, you know, clearing away that wreckage, I was able to allow God introduce himself more into me, and then I can rely more on that. But, you know, we don't change without pain, you know. So when I was going through some intense stuff, all I could do was just pray that, you know, God relieve me of this pain and the fear that I'm going through right now. And then, you know, it's faith with works with me. So I would do that, and then I would go do something, and for a brief amount of time, I'd be relieved of that, you know. And I think that's the result of kind of just opening up our hearts to and getting rid of all this junk that we've had in the past, you know. And that's what the fifth step is. And these promises are so true, you know. It's come true in my life. And that's all I really have on that myself. Thank you.
All right, we're going to be continuing on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. Carefully reviewing what we have done, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
Cool. Yeah, so this is a start and sixth step. So after I got home from doing my fifth step, my sponsor told me to read this paragraph. And really, the sixth step is only one short little paragraph in the big book. But it's very, very, very crucial. I came home, he told me to basically meditate for an hour. And what I was really doing is just searching my conscience, or my thoughts and my inner voice, and trying to see if I had left really anything out, or if there was something I was hiding, or something I forgot about. And I think I wrote down like a couple of small things. Like, I was like really trying to be as thorough as possible. They weren't big deals. I just ended up, he told me, if you have something, just call me, or you can come back and we can talk about it. But he wanted me to make sure that I'd done it all. I needed to go back and review 1, 2, 3, and 4 and make sure that I had fully comprehended to my innermost self all five of those. And I really, when I asked myself that, I got no answer. My answer was yes. I had done the best of my ability up to this point. Because if I'm hiding stuff, or if I really think I might be able to drink again, or if I don't really believe in something, and I'm just telling people I do, then the rest of it's not going to work. No, that's not how this works. I have to be true to myself. That's the only thing that matters. I mean, I can lie to other people all day long, but the fact is, I don't want to lie to myself. And so I asked myself about 1 through 5. I said, yeah, I think I've done this to the best of my ability. And I, yeah. I wanted, if I didn't, you know, if let's say I was lying or something, I don't think it would have done the same, had the same effect. It wouldn't have done, you know, what it's supposed to do. I realize that I've been lying to other people my whole life, but the most important thing was I was lying to myself. That's the only thing that mattered. And I was done lying to myself. So I did all this stuff true to myself because I wanted it to work. I was really sick of what I had become. But so that was how I did my sixth step. Real quick, when I was drinking, I kind of already realized what I'd become. I was already like ready for God to remove my character defects. I just was like, I was not happy with what I saw in the mirror. So I wanted this whole thing to work as soon as possible. So when I got to step six and I read my and saw what I was on my fourth step, I was ready. I was ready to be something different, really, simply put. Sixth step is I was just ready to be try to be something different. I pass.
Yeah, it's, I can't quite remember if I did that, to be honest. I don't know if I went home, you know, pulled the book off the shelf, you know, and cracked it open, the cobwebs came off. Like, I don't know if I did that exactly. But, you know, every day, I thank God from the bottom of my heart. You know, it's like working these steps in our life every day, I do that. I did review the first five proposals. I knew the big heavy hitters in my fourth step. So, you know, those were out of the way. And everything else was kind of like just not trivial. And I don't want to trivialize it, but, you know, the big things that, you know, were just gnawing at me that maybe were keeping me out there drinking, those were gone. You know, those were revealed in my fifth step. So that was really cool. And I love how, you know, building an arch through which we shall walk free man, because it's the pivot point, I think. You know, like, we have to make sure that we're building that arch, because, you know, that fifth step is the foundation for the program, you know, like fourth and fifth step, clearing away the wreckage. That was pretty cool. I don't have much to say on this. I did review, and I was ready for the next phase of this. You know, like as Ryan said, I got over the big hump with the fourth and fifth step, right? Woohoo! And now, you know, like it was kind of like just a roller coaster ride going down. But, you know, roller coaster, the sixth, seventh, all the other steps going down. But, you know, like I keep going back to this emotional sobriety thing, you know, like the longer you stay in here, like these are tools that we use to really live. And that's where I've really been able to, like, use those steps. Like, oh, my God, yeah, please remove this character defect now. I'm ready. I said I was ready, but I'm really ready now for you to remove it. Please do it. What do I need to do to remove it? You know, it's just the ever-going process of me. If there's no pain, there's no gain. If it's not broke, I'm not going to fix it. That's just the way my brain still works. You know, I'm sorry, but that's a flaw of mine that I don't. God, please remove that, you know, like, let me fix it before it broke, kind of thing. But so that's my experience on this paragraph. That's all I have.
All right, thank you. Now we're going to move over to page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing.
Yeah. This paragraph kind of goes like, as I've been sober and after doing my fifth step, this pops up where maybe a character defect is still hanging on where I'm still doing a certain thing that I used to do. The way I see how God helps me remove or become willing to get rid of those character defects is eventually this behavior will start causing me some sort of agitation or pain. And I might be able to, you know, ignore it at first. It's a lot harder to ignore when you're sober. But I'm still good at ignoring pain. But eventually it starts bugging me so bad. Or I experience an emotional jackpot where I just lose it. And I get willing after that. I'm just like that type of person that I'm not really going to let go of something unless I absolutely have to. And pain is a great motivator. The thing is, though, as I became willing and started letting these things go, became aware, asked God to remove them, the pain, though, gets further in between. It's definitely the space in between these things gets further and further apart. And I know that it's not totally gone. Things will happen. But my life is a lot more peaceful now after going through this sixth step. And when I do I know this is the 10th step, but when I continue to take inventory, I can see these character defects when they do pop up. And I've got to be ready to let go of them if I want to experience any change, if I want something different. And by the way, I don't self-will any of my character defects away. Like, if I could just wake up one morning and say, you know, I'm not gonna be impatient today.
Yeah.
Like, I would, and it would have gone away by now. But that's not how the character defects go away. You know, I don't just do a bunch of push-ups or something, and I just work the character defects out of me. That doesn't happen. God removes them, not me. So. Yeah, we'll see what needs to be removed next. I pass.
That was awesome, Ryan. Yeah, like what Ryan said, I didn't really know what was going on here, to be honest. You know, I was doing that, and, you know, more was revealed after more time in the program. Oh, this is holy cow, I need to have this gone. You know, that's kind of what took place for me. I was willing to have all of these things removed, and but I really didn't know the ramification of that, you know? I didn't know what all that meant. And I think experience and time has revealed that, oh, okay, you know, I do want these things removed, or I'm not ready to have these removed. And like Ryan said, you know, I can't remove them on my own, I can't remove them myself. You know, if that was the case, it would have been gone a long time ago, or maybe not. It's this gift that we can rely on this higher power to, well, first of all, we have faith in this thing to remove these defects of character. That's incredible, you know, that I'm putting my faith in that. But I'm able to do that because I'm able to look back and see what this thing has done for me and has brought me to this point, you know, in my life. And that was a gift that I was kind of given, is that hindsight look into everything and everybody and all the experiences I had that brought me to this point, that gave me the faith to say, you know, to believe in something greater than myself that is going to remove these character defects. And believe it or not, it works. It works in my life. I will ask for it to, you know, and I'm jumping ahead, but I'll ask for it to be removed. And then that I have to take certain steps to, you know, massage that, whatever that may be. My higher power will do certain things, you know, like put people in my, put, you know, pr- perhaps sponsees in my path, you know, things to divert me from that crazy fear or something like that. That's how it works in my life. You know, that's how it always works. If I'm ready to receive it and have that removed, I just have to work a little bit, because it's always there. It's like it's an infinite power you can tap. So that's all I have.
All right, thank you. And our final paragraph will be on page 76. When ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." We have then completed step 7.
Yeah, I love the 7th step prayer, and I try to do this one as often as I can, just kind of like a mantra that just goes on through my brain, especially in the morning. But I like to look at the part where it says the good and the bad, because we have a lot of good stuff about us. It's not all bad stuff. And if I focus, I like to focus on my good traits and do more of that. And when I just focus on doing more good, it kind of just weans out the bad. I don't have to avoid doing bad stuff if I'm just focusing on trying to do more good. It just kind of happens that way. So when I do the 7th step prayer, I just kind of ask and like meditate and think about what's the next right thing to do. And if I constantly try to do the next right thing, then I'm not going to do the next wrong thing. And it just seems to work out a lot better. And I do this on a daily, if I do this on a daily basis or even every other day, changes start to happen. I mean, over time, it just doesn't all happen overnight, but if this is where my mind's at, especially in the morning, getting ready for each day, then over time, I do become something different. And my character defects do get weaned out. That's all I got on that. Thank you.
Oh, that's great, man. That's really well put. Gosh, I don't really know what to say, but yeah, subliminally, I do this on a daily basis. I will say the 7th step prayer, and it's just almost habit that I'm willing, you know, when certain things are revealed and the pain again gets too great, I'm willing to have that removed. You know, please remove every. I was willing to have everything removed, every single defect of character removed, but then it's as it is revealed and it becomes sharp. You know, I want that thorn to be removed. That's kind of the way I work. And, you know, unfortunately, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, like that's just the way I am. But, you know, as I go out from here and do your bidding, you know, and that's in the rooms. Reaching out a hand, you know, doing service work, doing all these things that distract Greg from Greg, you know, like distract what goes on in my head sometimes, you know, the fears, all these other character defects that I have. It's like a daily reprieve, you know, a daily reprieve of our character defects sometimes. And then I think slowly, if I look back, slowly some of those things have really almost, you know, some of those character defects and deficiencies have dwindled down to really nothing anymore. They don't affect me or the people around me anymore. But for me, it's, you know, saying this every day to some degree, you know, prayer, this hurts. Okay, what do you want me to do, God? You know, it's that simple. If I have that little bit of not having to say this prayer exactly as it says, but, you know, just having that little click of, okay, I know this is hurting, what I need to do to maybe, like, fix it or alleviate it temporarily, or you just got to keep working on it. And that's how it works for me in my life. And it's a blessing that I have these tools to do this. You know, I can't believe I'm, you know, asking something to remove these things that I didn't really even know I had. That's a miracle in my life. That's crazy. It's incredible. But it does work. You know, that's all I got. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. We will now pass the seven tradition basket and the green card in the seven tradition states. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contribution covers each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. And while that's going around, do we have any AA-related announcements?
Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic.
It's Stephanie.
This Saturday service, our Virginia delegate, Elliot, is going to give his delegate's report. It is over on Yule Road from 10 to 2. District 14 has cleanup. We need help. If you have any sponsors or are looking for service, see me at the meeting.
Thank you.
I'm Greg, I'm an alcoholic. Can I get a microphone? you guys are probably aware of Whiskey Paul is happening at the oceanfront October 26th to the 28th. It's at Holiday Inn Express, I believe it is. It's going to be a really good time. That's coming together. You can kind of get with me or Ryan if you want more information about it. You can register online, whiskeypaul2018.org. And there's also Icky Paul, which is happening, which is the International Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. That's happening in the summer, Labor Day, the weekend of Labor Day. That's going to be a really cool event, and it's close. It's up in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Nicole.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members raise their hands? And is there anyone here in the first 30 days of sobriety so that we can welcome you? Anybody? All right. Well, we do have literature available on the table to your left. Please see me or a home group member after the meeting if you would like to purchase a book. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and talk to me. And just some reminders. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. And we have all meeting audio recordings and upcoming events posted on our website, simpleactions.net. So in closing, can we thank the panel again for sharing tonight? Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, just up Colonial, at 22nd Street past the railroad tracks. Can someone please read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Thank you, BJ.
My name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it.
word of prayer.
Thank you.